You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CD Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
A search warrant for two missing teens say they think they are among seven bodies found in the town of Henrietta, Oklahoma. Okmulgee County Sheriff Eddie Rice.
We believe that we have found the persons. We just are waiting for confirmation. Our hearts go out to the families and friends, schoolmates, and everyone else, and it's just a tragedy.
At least six people killed, 30 injured in a huge dust storm created traffic pileup today on South Central Illinois' I-95. Illinois State Police Major Ryan Sterrick.
The low visibility, the high winds, everything just came together, unfortunately, in this particular stretch of I-55.
May 9th, that's the date President Biden has called a White House meeting with congressional leaders on raising the debt ceiling. Just days after the Muslim fasting month of Ramadan wrapped, President Biden hosting an Eid celebration at the White House with prominent Muslim leaders. This is ABC News. Britain's King Charles and Queen Camilla preparing for Saturday's historic coronation, but not all the reported changes are being welcomed.
A mixed reception to a new moment in the coronation of King Charles and Queen Camilla. All Britons will be called on to swear allegiance to the king. The palace sees this as a modern update, as usually only aristocrats present at the ceremony do this. But swearing allegiance to Charles and his successors technically also means Prince Andrew. Something one pressure group calls offensive and tone-deaf.
ABC's James Longman at Buckingham Palace. A top UN official saying two rival generals in Sudan have agreed to join negotiations and try and end the war. Hundreds killed over the last 2 weeks. State Department confirming nearly 1,000 U.S. citizens were evacuated from Sudan. A third bus convoy made it to safety today after a 500-mile drive to the Red Sea. Talks continue between the Writers Guild of America and the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers. Andy Field, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Heat, power, and water are things people cannot take for granted. The elderly, disabled, the veterans. With record increases in basic costs of living, people are struggling to keep these services on and their bills paid. If you are in danger of losing heat, power, or water, call 1-800-506-5596 or apply online at heat.help. You may not ask for it, but the Keep Wisconsin Warm Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Good news for Wisconsin's Department of Workforce Development Youth Apprenticeship Program. Over 8,000 high school juniors and seniors are pursuing paid on-the-job training in fields like manufacturing, health, science, and agriculture. That's up 30% from the 2021-2022 school year. The Earn While You Learn model connects apprentices with high-skilled, high-wage employment with employers across the state. A key component is that no apprenticeship is offered without a respective job opening. Eight men ranging in age from 17 to 22 have been arrested and charged in a mail ring theft, which included the armed robberies of mail carriers. Prosecutors are calling it an organized crime ring. Robberies happened across Milwaukee's north side between October and March. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standard room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come tickets.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance or VA Life. VA life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA life insurance.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA life insurance.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Basically, the average working person is struggling to keep up. Rents are going up, cost of living's going up, food, gas, all of this stuff going up. And why? Not because Joe Biden. Joe Biden is not the problem here. Although our political folks who want to make money off of it want us to believe that. It's all about the greed. You know, I think about that French economist. It's greedflation. He's never seen anything like it in his lifetime. And you go, gee, never in your lifetime have you seen opportunists use a moment of crisis to their advantage? And this is where, understand, the idea of keeping us at each other's throats, still with the red hats and the blue hats. Our team has to win. And therefore, if our team has to win, your team has to lose. And we see this in every political decision. When was the last time you saw something that said, hey, we're going to help working people? We're going to help families do better. Especially coming out of our friends in the Republican Party. Because right now, whether you like it or not, they're the party who's attempting to undo the 20th century. They're the party that's attempting to tear down what was built by the greatest generation. And return us to those days of 1886. Return us to those days of poverty and desperation for working people. That means you and me. That means the people who would be down in that crowd, whatever side you would be on, whether you're the strikers striking for better wages, hours, conditions, or the thugs who are just there to make a paycheck to beat them up. I think about the quote that's often attributed to Jay Gould. I could easily pay half of the working class to murder the other half. This is that moment. And as we see the strikes that are happening now and this resurgence of young people discovering what the labor movement is, discovering what solidarity is, discovering that they have power, we're seeing the moneyed interests doing everything they can do. And look, we're not going to tolerate as a country the kind of, or at least not yet. I still think it's going to happen at some point, but not yet. The kind of beatings that we saw back in the 30s and 40s. But we'll arrest people. We'll make their lives miserable because we're much more humane now. You know, back, you know, in the 1850s, 60s, 70s, into that era, we were shooting people who struck. And then we started beating them with clubs. So we went from bullets to billy clubs. Now we got people with briefcases. Still the same outcome. Crush worker power. Crush the ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. Put people in their place. Just more civilized. Want to hear your thoughts. It is May Day, the Workers International Workers Day. Want to hear your thoughts. How did you spend your May Day? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. To share that. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
John, listening at KTNF in Minnesota, wrote, I think you missed the point. Eisenhower, and this is brilliant, because, you know, as we were fighting for International Workers' Day, you know, for Labor Day to be May 1st, he points out that Eisenhower, during his administration, declared May 1st as Law Day. And this is that, again, which side of the equation are you on? Are you on the side of the law and order and keeping people in their place, or allowing people the freedom, the real freedom, to do better, to fight for better? I love the fact that our Supreme Court is losing its mind on a whole bunch of cases and is moving us quickly back to an era where if you were hungry enough and desperate enough to work in poverty conditions for desperation wages, that was your liberty. It was liberty of contract. The Lochner era is what they called it. And it said, look, government can't do anything to make your life better. Sorry, you're on your own. And you can't do anything either, because all the power lies in the hands of the employer. And that was, you know, that's coming back. And the reason why it's important to remember the past, because the same things are going to happen, only with better technology. And I point to an article written by Josh Idelson over at Bloomberg that came out today that said, look, you know, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that the White House is looking at how companies are using AI information to manage and surveil their workforce, and how we're so far behind on all of this, that there are very few places that have even addressed it, let alone have protections for working people in place. And that the AI revolution that is going to sweep across this country in very devastating ways for working people, no one's talking about. You know why? Because we're worried about transgender stuff. We're worried about who's going to what bathroom. We're worried about what little book that little Johnny's not going to read in the library. We're fed this stuff. So again, that we're in that pit, that mass of humanity, that rumble of violence in humanity, of eating each other, half the working class, literally tearing the other half apart. And why? So that all of the things that make those people in that ivory tower more. You know, when Samuel Gompers, the founder of the American Federation of Labor, said, you know, what does labor want? He answered the question, we want more. We want more of more schools and less jailhouses. You know, more of the things that make life worth living, more of the opportunities to lead our better lives, and less of the things that tear us apart. We want more and better. Whereas our wealth class, our ivory tower folks, they just want more. More power, more control, more wealth, more to line their pockets with. And their insatiable appetite and greed and greed knows no bounds. So I look at what's going on here, and as Josh points out, there are a number of firms, Amazon being one of the big ones, who surveils basically everything that their workers do. Every keystroke, every rapid eye movement. You know, as someone who drives a truck for a living, there's technology out there right now. And it's been here for a while, that while you're working, it is recording literally every single thing that you do. Because we do this stuff on truck drivers first, because they're such a torn apart industry. Because we're hyper individual. We're the kings of the road. So we're easy to pick apart. Because there isn't really any unity. You know, the knights of the highway are no longer. We're now just a whole bunch of people willing to slit each other's throats for pennies. Because that's what deregulation brought us. That's what breaking the unions brought us. That's what you're your own boss. Hooray for you and the heck with everyone else brought us. But there's technology out there that, while you're out there being the king of the road, it's recording your eye movements. It's recording everything you do, how many times you touch the brake pedal, you know, what gear you're in, how fast you're going, you know, how many times you're how long you're out of gear, you name it, everything. And it's been going on for years. And it is now expanding into office work. It's now expanding into warehouse work. It's now expanding into every facet of our life. And it's only going to get worse because we're still fighting over the outrage candy. We're still fighting over the stuff that is being fed to us. Now, as Josh points out in his article, there's only a couple of places that have bothered to do anything. For instance, Amazon. The State House passed a bill requiring companies like Amazon to provide their workforce with any data collected on them. You know, that should be simple. We should have, and this is a much bigger question, how much data corporate America has on each and every one of us. Now, I was just talking to a friend the other day, and we were talking about some of the old movies from the 80s. And I think it was Blade Runner. Where you walk down the street and every billboard, every window, shop window, everything was throwing advertisements at you specifically tailored for you. And how I remember at the time back in the 80s going, wow, that is incredibly dangerous. How do they know so much? How do they get all that? Well, we're now living it. Thank you, Google. You know, I Google something and 6 months later, I'm still seeing ads popping up going, hey, remember me? But we don't have control of our own data. And what happened to our constitutional right to privacy, to being secure in our papers? Yeah, never mind that. Also, California and New York, they passed legislation that would regulate production quotas. They've been doing that for the past few years. And again, AI is what's tracking all of this. Now, are we moving fast enough? No. And I love the fact that Bob Casey, the senator here from Pennsylvania, is starting, moving in the direction to begin regulating this, to begin what is already invasive, what is already, you know, spreading like wildfire, beginning to try and rein some of this in. I fear too late. And I fear with a Supreme Court that is hell-bent on destroying any ability of citizens to oversee corporate America, that this goes by the wayside because of the Supreme Court. But we have to fight this because the AI tsunami is coming. And we're not prepared for it. You know, I've read a lot about the era of the Industrial Revolution and how technology just made lives of working people incredibly desperate. And all of these technological advances throughout history have been for the benefit overall, but have harmed working people the most. It's always the person who lost the job at the buggy whip factory or at the vacuum tube factory. Or, you know, the truck drivers who are going to lose their job because of self-driving trucks. It's always working people who take it on the chin. And there's rarely ever anything that helps them or makes them whole. And this is the world that we're in. This is, again, all of the my team wins, your team loses, politics stuff that's being thrown at us is not as important as being able to put food on the table and ensuring your children get fed. This is what I'm talking about. This big picture stuff that, you know, see the elephant, because all we're getting is the elephant's backside. And a lot of it's just a bunch of you know what dumping out on us. So the question is, how do we rein some of this stuff in? And I say it's about having the conversations I had with people today. It's about talking about issues. It's about talking about organizing and using the labor movement as that vehicle that reunites us back to the public square, that reunites us on common values, instead of continuing to, well, shred us and tear us apart. We should find the things that bring us together. And I'm hopeful, feeding the kids, keeping a roof over their head, kind of important. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day May Day celebrators in Cleveland, Ohio were attacked as they marched to protest the imprisonment of socialist Eugene V. Debs. 1919 was a year of massive upheaval, marked by countless strikes and protests, riots and bomb threats. But much of the country was still caught up in the jingoism of the war. Debs had just entered prison to serve a 10-year sentence. He had been convicted in Cleveland of sedition for an anti-war speech he gave in Canton, Ohio the year before. Thousands of trade unionists, anarchists, socialists, and communists marched toward Public Square in downtown Cleveland. Prominent socialist Charles Rutenberg led one of the contingents. He planned to address the rally in defense of Debs, and also to promote his candidacy in the upcoming mayoral elections. May Day marchers carried red flags and American flags and banners reading, "Workers of the World Unite." Liberty Loan workers stopped them en route, demanding they lower their flags. Marchers refused and attempted to proceed towards downtown. Fighting broke out in the streets and lasted for hours until mounted police and army tanks charged the crowd. Two were killed, at least 40 seriously injured, and as many as 120 were arrested. Rutenberg was charged with assault with intent to kill, though charges were later dismissed. Socialist Party headquarters were ransacked. The city immediately moved to restrict parades and socialist meetings and banned red flags. Local newspapers were quick to scapegoat immigrants and their supported Bolshevik sympathies for the riot. The attack in Cleveland served as an early warning of the Red Scare that would fully erupt by the end of the year. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
When public officials get themselves mired in the muck of corruption, they can always count on Senator Ted Cruz to issue a moral judgment. If the offender is a Democrat, he pronounces the corruption inexcusably grotesque. If it's a Republican, he wails that the offender is the victim. For example, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was recently caught, yet again, butt deep in judicial immorality, taking hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of freebies from a Texas real estate baron who has both a partisan and corporate interest in Thomas's court rulings. So, Cruz to the rescue. "No judicial impropriety here," he squawks, "for this is nothing but a diabolical plot by Democrats to smear poor Clarence." But Thomas is busy smearing himself, so Dems can just take the advice of Woodrow Wilson. Never attempt to murder a man who's committing suicide. From the start of his court tenure, Thomas has been a shameless seeker of personal gain, tucking untold sums from untold sources in the inner pockets of his judicial robes. He learned to hide his corruption in 2004 when he actually reported taking pricey gifts from a special interest, which got him widely condemned. So he reformed. No, he didn't quit taking gimmies, he just quit disclosing them. Thomas is a supreme grifter, but sadly he's not alone. Many recent justices have fallen from the pedestal of judicial integrity, cozying up to the moneyed interests. Gifts aside, we now have a hyper-partisan right-wing Republican majority taking their judicial opinions from those same interests, turning America's unelected third branch of government into an autocratic, plutocratic political agency. Then they wonder why their public approval rating and legitimacy are in the ditch. This is Jim Hightower saying, since they won't reform themselves, we must do it for them. To help, go to fixthecourt.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some big news coming out of our U.S. Supreme Court. And this has been coming for a while. Look, we've been talking about this Chevron case for a couple of years now, knowing that this is on the horizon, that undoing what this decision did, basically, you know, gutting our regulatory agencies and our ability to oversee what corporate America does. We knew this was coming, and now the Supreme Court has taken it and. One of the liberal justices, so I hate framing it like that, has recused herself because I guess she heard the case at the lower level. So now you're going to have six of the conservative justices and Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor So I don't see positive here. I don't see that this doesn't go the wrong way. But here to explain exactly what this Chevron deference is, what this case is, and what could come out of this, I've asked our good friend Renato Mariotti to come talk with us. Renato's a former federal prosecutor and the host of the incredible podcast, It's Complicated. We'll get links out on social media how you can check out the It's Complicated podcast. Renato, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure. How you doing?
I'm good. I don't want to get into all the legalese and all the jargon that you guys get yourself all involved in, but this is kind of a big deal because I've been talking about this for a couple of years now with people who are a lot smarter than I am and what this means. This is a big deal, isn't it?
It is. It's actually one of the most significant cases I think we've seen in a long time. Obviously, look, there's, you know, when something happens like a overturning Roe versus Wade, that grabs a lot of attention. But this is something that could have a massive impact on how our government works. You know, a lot of the work that is done by the federal government, as you know, Rick, is not done by our elected representatives, because let's face it, Congress doesn't get a lot done. But it's actually by regulatory agencies, right? Everything from the FAA to the NLRB to the CDC, all sorts of things that matter to people listening to this program, whether you're in labor and you're concerned about labor relations, or you're concerned about your flights arriving on time, or you're concerned about the safety of the foods that your children eat. That is handled by regulatory agencies. And there's a decision that's been in place since 1984, since I was a little boy, that essentially said that the courts defer to those agencies and how they interpret their own actions, and essentially allows them to put out regulations and have those agencies essentially be deferred to unless there's some clear message by Congress to the contrary. And you know, Rick, Congress doesn't do a lot of bill passing nowadays, or law passing. And so that's given a lot of room for regulation. Of course, right. We all know that what the right wing wants to do, which is turn the clock backwards, so to speak.
No, and this is one of these things where, you know, look, even if you know, legislators did write the perfect bill, they don't know everything. And a lot of times they don't know anything about the kind of things they're passing. So they can't know. This is deferring to people with knowledge, the experts. And I fear we're in a moment, Renato, where knowledge is hated, where smart people are looked down upon. And this kind of thing will be celebrated, because I'm looking at the social media going, we're free. We're going to be free. And I'm going, what are we free from?
Right. It's the same attitude that had people attacking Dr. Fauci and the CDC, right, when they were imposing regulations, has people attacking the SEC when they're trying to regulate the financial markets. It's that same instinct. And it's dangerous because it's married here with a sort of federalist society streak of making it harder for government to do anything effective, right? Which is old school conservatism, sort of like the sort of knee-jerk reactionary Fox News anti-woke stuff combined with this right-wing, federalist society thing, which what the result's going to be, as you and I know, is that the NLRB isn't going to be able to issue guidance. The SEC is not going to be able to regulate our financial markets. The FDA is going to have more trouble making sure our food and drugs are safe. All the things that we all rely on are going to be harder for those agencies to do.
Yeah, but are we surprised by this? I mean, I'm looking at the court now, and I'm, you know, they're like, as you pointed out, they're Federalist Society appointees. That's who they came from. A lot of them, you know, still the buy into this original intent stuff. So this is ideologically right in their ballpark. If it's not exactly enumerated in the law, then it doesn't exist and no smart person can ever interpret it, just like you do with the Constitution. You know, there's no interpretation. It has to be written exactly the way it is or it doesn't exist. It's that kind of black and white thinking that I think not just dangerous in everyday civilization, but in regulatory oversight.
Well, people always presume they focused on these sort of high profile hot button issues, but what they don't recognize is when the court changes, you know, the people are focused on things besides courts and judges usually, but what they don't understand is that this is the sort of area, things like this, where who you have in the Supreme Court makes a big difference. Because at the time our nation was founded, there were no regulatory agencies. There was no FTC or FAA or CDC. None of these things existed. That's something that's a creation of a more modern era of our country. And so how and whether you defer to those agencies and how much authority you give them is something that nobody who was thinking back in the 1790s was not even in part of their imagination. And so there's a lot of latitude for judges and justices to make law, so to speak, through their rulings. And here's an example of something that I think we take for granted. Okay, 1984 is when the Chevron case was decided. You mentioned Chevron at the beginning. That's what this is all about. 1984. Okay, that was almost 40 years ago now. It's a long time that people have made and have had kind of expectations about how government works, and that may all change because of some Supreme Court justices.
No, and I fully expect it to change. Do you have any hope that this doesn't get overturned?
Yeah, no, I think it's just a matter of how and what it looks like. In other words, it's sort of like Roe versus Wade. Once the court was where it was, I mean, I had said as soon as Kavanaugh got put on the court, appointed to the court, I said, this means the end of Roe versus Wade. I'm sorry to report that I was correct about that, but I didn't know at the time whether there'd be an incrementalist sort of rollback of Roe versus Wade, you know, death by a thousand cuts, or whether it was going to all happen at once, which is, of course, what happened. And I don't know here whether there's going to be just a flat out rejection of Chevron deference entirely and sort of basically rolling back the authority of agencies, or whether they sort of modify it a little bit around the edges, that sort of thing. So I think it's really just a matter of how much change there's going
to
be.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to have to wait to find out. And I always fear the worst because they've shown me that's what they're willing to do. You brought up the Dobbs decision. There was the Janus decision. They always seem to go toward let's rewrite the 20th century. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Renato Mariotti, former federal prosecutor and host of the It's Complicated podcast. We'll get links out on how you can take a look at his podcast. I got to get your thoughts on what's going on in Florida. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but today DeSantis signed three what he's calling anti-crime bills. And one of them is they would make, you know, child molesters eligible for the death penalty. The Supreme Court's already said that unless someone's died, the death penalty's off the table. But he's pushing this. This being one of those, another one being enhanced. They said enhanced criminal penalties for selling fentanyl or fentanyl analogs that look like candy. And also, this is the one I really want to ask about. They want the Florida Supreme Court to develop a uniform bond schedule. And how do they put it? To forbid a person from being released before his or her first court appearance if charged with a violent or heinous crime. Does that happen?
Not really. It doesn't happen much. It's a pretty rare, it would be a very, very rare circumstance where that's the case. There will be some edge cases. Okay. I mean, I prosecuted it. A person, an older lady who was mentally ill who tried to rob a bank. Things like that. But it's pretty rare where something like that's going to happen. I have to say all of that, Rick, seems to me like trying to use and shape the criminal justice system to get more airtime on Fox News. It's really a use
Absolutely.
Of the criminal justice system to score political points. And I just don't think that's the way we should go about criminal justice.
No, when I first saw this story, I go, look who's running for president, because that's what this really is all about. Now, look, the Supreme Court's not going to allow them to kill child molesters. Although, look, as a parent, I get parental justice. I get that. But not state-sponsored murder. I'm just not there. But this is all that stuff that reeks of, you know, Fox News. You know, we're letting violent criminals walk on the streets. We're catching them and releasing them. And I'm going, you know, everyone I've known who's done this stuff, that's not happening.
You know, criminal justice has been something where, and it's been decade after decade, there's been a politicization of prosecution. And the way that we handle criminal justice in this country should be outside of that. And we've always gotten into trouble when we've tried to use politics to determine whether and how people should be prosecuted for crimes. It's how we ended up with the, quote, war on drugs and over-incarceration, for example. And it's ironic because on Fox News, they're always railing against what they call the Soros-backed prosecutors in their mind, who are pursuing there's some sort of a quote woke, I don't even know what that means, agenda. And this is basically them doing what they're trying to criticize others for doing, which is using criminal justice and people's lives, okay, to pursue an agenda. I don't have any love for child molesters either, to be very blunt. I prosecuted people who did that, and I've had victims of that in my family. It's absolutely heinous crime. But I think we should let judges decide punishment. Judges and juries ultimately have a role in punishment, not politicians. I think that's the better way for it.
I'm glad you framed that like that, because one of the arguments I make is as you're making these hard, fast, these absolutes, it takes out any part of compassion. It takes apart any bit of the criminal justice system being for rehabilitation. It's all about crime. It's all about punishment and retribution. And I don't know that that's a positive.
Well, it's a challenge. Okay. Because I think that criminal punishments are a challenging thing. In certain circumstances, for example, there's a big debate over mandatory minimum sentences, which in general have often resulted in over incarceration because prosecutors will use those as a tool to put a stiff sentence on someone who may not deserve it. But in certain circumstances where judges are not sentencing, for example, child pornography is an area where that sometimes judges have given too much of a break to people engaging in that. I can see the need for that. But I will just say that I think that the punishment of someone is one of the most serious decisions that a judge can ever make. And it's best made by a judge who sees the person in front of them, who has all the facts and circumstances, not only about that case, but about the person's life who they're sentencing. And I don't think it's appropriate for us to be using the lives of people to make political points. It's just too important for that.
No, I'm right there with you. But here's the thing. On the other side, this is a big winner on the right with the red hat crowd.
Sure.
Because it's we're being tough on crime. When you go, I'm sorry, the death penalty doesn't deter crime. Statistics show it doesn't. It's just about we're going to exact retribution. And I'm against the death penalty for one reason, and that's it's permanent. There's no oops, we made a mistake. There's no going back and undoing it. Look, are there people who I think deserve it? Absolutely. Someone touches my kid. There may be some street justice there, but I'm not in favor of a state sponsored system that does this, and especially using it for political gain, like I think DeSantis is doing.
Well, the first prosecutor I ever worked for was Pat Fitzgerald, a very famous prosecutor. And he, I think, rather famously made the argument within the Justice Department that his opposition to use of the death penalty by the Justice Department was just the amount of resources it takes. In other words, it takes more resources to prosecute a death penalty case with all the appeals and everything else than it does. Far more than it does a sentence of life in prison. And it's just not a good use of prosecutorial resources. Personally, I could see why in certain extreme cases the death penalty might make sense. If Osama bin Laden was caught in U.S. borders, I could understand that. But that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is a politician who sees his poll numbers not where he wants. He's trying to get some free polls, a boost in the polls at the expense of people's lives. And I just think that, like you said, it's a very dangerous thing to be doing.
Yeah, for me in this moment, it reeks of opportunism and desperation. I mean, this seems like that last Hail Mary kind of, hey, I need to save my campaign. What can I do to rile the base and get them around to me? And this is it. So I'm curious, do you think this is going to work? Do you think this will revive the DeSantis campaign? Since he seems to be taking beatings in other arenas?
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, one thing that's happening, by the way, is the Trump campaign spending all the money that they hoodwinked from their supporters. They're spending it against DeSantis years before the race, right? And I think, you know, the reality is DeSantis is trying to have his cake and eat it too, be on the sidelines, not run for president, while trying to sort of surreptitiously run. It's not working for him. And let's face it, I think the far right wing is pretty captured by Trump right now.
No. At this moment, it's Trump's to lose, and we'll see how that plays out. But Renato, as always, I appreciate the insight and your expertise. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our good friend Renato Mariotti. Make sure you check out the podcast. It's complicated. We'll get links out on social media. How you can take a look at that. Gonna take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1886. That was the day that workers throughout the United States walked off their jobs in a coordinated, planned effort and demanded the 8-hour day. What made this strike truly revolutionary was that the workers were not asking for reduced pay for reduced hours. They wanted their pay level to stay the same. Chicago labor activist Alan Parsons explained this that March for the Chicago Daily News, saying, quote, "The movement to reduce the work hours is intended by its projectors to give a peaceful solution to the difficulties between capitalists and laborers. I have always held that there were two ways to settle this trouble, either by peaceable means or violent methods. Reduced hours, or 8 hours, is the peace offering. Fewer hours mean more pay. Reduced hours is only the measure of economic reform, which consults the interests of the laborers as producers, which can only be acquired by possessing and consuming a larger share of their own project. This would diminish the profits of the exploiters." That first day of May, tens of thousands took to the streets in Chicago, and an estimated 300,000 protested across the nation, marching for the 8-hour day. The strike met with early success, but then 3 days later, an unknown person threw a bomb at a workers' rally in Chicago's Haymarket Square. The government crackdown against the 8-hour movement was quick and harsh. 8 men stood trial in Chicago for the bombing. 4 were martyred despite a lack of evidence tying them to the bomb. But the idea of the 8-hour day was not so easily crushed. It spread not only in the United States, but across the world. Now, more than a century later, May Day, this day, is the International Workers' Holiday. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So I go back to the whole DeSantis thing and the death penalty. And look, you know, conservatives have always used that as their rallying cry. See how tough I am? Look at me be tough on crime. And I look at this DeSantis thing, and honestly, the first thing I thought of as I'm reading through this, and I saw a couple of the videos of his speech with the big American flag behind him like he's Patton or something. I'm going, you know, tell me you're running for president without telling me you're running for president. This is riling the base up. This is trying to get them, say he's Mr. Law and Order. He'll crush those others. And the problem with a guy like this is eventually you or me or, well, us become the others. You know, how far down this path until it's your kids or mine or us between the Buford T. Justices of the world, you know, with the iron fist of the law come down on top of us. Now, as I said, I'm against the idea of the death penalty. There's a bunch of reasons, but the number one is, you know, it's not foolproof. We have executed innocent people. And there's no going back on that. And as a working class guy myself, if something were to happen in my life, who knows? I know I don't have the resources to defend myself. And as I think Renato pointed out, it's a matter of resources on the state side as well, because they spend a lot of money, but they don't seem to run out of it as fast as an average working class person. I look at the difference between races in using the death penalty. That's a problem. There's a lot of inequities in the system that you go, I don't know. I'm not there. And I know if it were you or your family, you would be, and this is where I come back to, if it's my kids, I understand vigilante justice. I do. I'm not advocating for it. I'm not suggesting you go do it, but I understand it. That should not be how we run our government. And, you know, I've had these conversations for a very long time on this topic, and my mind has not changed. Also, there is the fact that spending life in jail is no picnic. Ask the insurrectionists. Ask Marjorie Trainwreck Greene and Go-Go Gohmert and the rest of them who go visit their heroes in jail in Washington how wonderful the jail system is. And this, again, goes back to that image that people have of, you know, these January 6th insurrectionists, they believed, you know, jail was like Club Med. You got, you know, three meals in a cot, and I can watch cable TV, and I can work out all day long, and it's utopia. You know, it's a good thing. Too good. We need bread and water and misery. Well, they're now in jail and going, it wasn't what they thought it was. You know, and look, our media structure, they're falling for it because they were fawning all over DeSantis in his speech, and he got what he wanted out of it. He got a lot of attention. Look at me being presidential. Look at me with the big giant flag behind me and how wonderful I am. And look, and I can make quips, you know, like the old Gipper about how tough we're going to be. Yeah, our media being our media because it's all about the clicks, man. And speaking about all about the click, CNN doing what CNN does. Evidently, they announced that Donald Trump's gonna participate in a town hall next week in New Hampshire. And thanks for ruining my birthday on May 10th, my birthday. The CNN's gonna have Caitlin Collins, the anchor of CNN This Morning, hosting this. This town hall, I guess, of Republicans and undeclared voters, they're saying. And all this is going to be is an hour or two of Trump just rambling on about, you know, whatever it is he wants to ramble on. It's like a giant commercial. But they do it because, well, it's about the money. They are now coming around to the Rupert Murdoch. Trump is good for business. Or the Les Moonves. You know, I know he's bad for democracy, but he's good for CBS. He's good for our bottom line. And I keep coming back to how do we break this cycle? Because the outrage that they keep shoveling down our throats keeps us from solving any real problems. The media was all abuzz over DeSantis today. Did we talk about anything that's going to make your life better? Did we talk about anything that's going to help your kids go to college or any of that? See, I believe government is the tool that we use collectively to do the things we can't do individually. We want to educate our children. We want to send them to college. We want to, you know, invest. We want infrastructure. We want military. We want health care. These are things that we should be fighting for. And yet all we're doing, and thanks to the least among us, we're focused on the show, on the circus, on what's tearing us apart. And it's bread and circus. Or as I say, you know, reality TV and Cheetos. And that's what our politics have turned into.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.